Alex Dowsett, how was your experience on the Zonkaland?
Yes, pretty crazy, unforgettable. The people, the enthusiasm was just unreal. Yeah, the first 5K of it dragged, and then the last 5K was just amazing.
An experience? Have you had an experience like that on any climbs in a race before?
Nah, never. That was something else. Yeah.
Chris Hamilton, how did you find the climb?
It was steep, that's for sure. But no, it was really cool because when you're on your own, the crowd's pretty excitable, and you might even get a few pushes along the way. So it was really cool.
Any bad moments?
It's kind of a bad moment. You're in the Giro d'Italia, no such thing.
Killian Franchini, BMC Racing. Killian, how did you find the climb?
Yeah, it was amazing with all the people, and I could take it a little bit easier at the end, and I rode up with Steve, my friend Morabito, and so it was nice, yeah.
Hard though?
Yeah, it was still very hard. Very steep, but the people made it a little bit easier.
What about compared to other climbs you've done in races?
Well, I think it's one of the hardest which I ever did, yeah. And before the stage was not really easy, so that made it even harder. So it was really a challenge to get up.
Glad to tick it off and move on?
Yeah, exactly. And tomorrow is another hard stage waiting, and then we have finally a rest day. Yeah.
Robert, can you tell me about your climb today?
It was steep.
Robert Hessink, Team Lotto NL Jumbo.
It was steep, and it was hard, and it was bad thing to see my teammate with mechanical issues. Could help him on the bike again, but it's of course not nice for us to see him lose time.
And lastly, what's tougher, Zonkaland or Angliru?
Depends on the quality of the legs.
That was quite tough, to be honest.
Jack Higg, Mitchelton Scott.
I think it's just about on par with the Angliru. Last year at Welter, it's a brutal climb.
You look fresh as a daisy.
I did not push too hard after I set up. There is not much you can do for someone on a climb so steep. To have teammates there does not do too much, and when Simon is going as fast as he is, I couldn't hang on even if I wanted to.
Were you able to catch up now with the result? Another good day for Simon.
Yeah, I just got told then, another really good day for Simon. We put time into Tom, which is ideally what we had to do today. So yeah, all's well, ends well.
Sam Oman, Team Sunweb.
How do you find that climb?
Brutal. Hardest one I ever did, I think.
Hardest one. Have you done it before today?
No, it was the first time.
And were the gears okay? I mean, have you ever been up a climb where you've needed such low gears?
Yeah, in Basque country, but in Basque country the climb's less 5K, maybe like this, and this is 10K. 10K of hell. It's unbelievable.
Lawrence Ten Dam, Team Sunweb.
You cannot compare it. I never did a climb like this. Oh yeah, maybe I did it in the Vuelta, but then I was in the front, so.
So this was different.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. From Grand Tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee stops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Monte Zoncolan.
Cozze ci tene, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, non spigudeci cora, cozze ci tene, cozze.
Hello, my name's Lionel Burney and I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello.
And returning to the Giro d'Italia, Richard Moore. Welcome back.
Thank you, Lionel.
It's good to have you back.
Daniel, thank you.
We're all together for a day or possibly two. I'm not sure. Are we? Will we all be together again tomorrow?
I'm going to Austria tomorrow.
Well, there we are.
I'm getting as far away as possible. I'm going to a different country
tomorrow. It was going so well. It was going so well. Well, we opened the episode there with the voices of several of the riders who had battled their way to the top of the Monte Zoncaland, stage 14 of the Giro d'Italia from San Vito al Tagliamento to Monte Zoncaland, 186 kilometres. The break, of course, included an Androni rider. It was Francesco Gavazzi's turn today. He was joined by
the playmaker. He's one of the registi. as Gianni Savio told us the other day.
Well, he was off up the road, keeping the Androni 100% record of getting in breaks going still as the second week comes to a close. He was joined by Jacopo Mosca of Villa Tristina, Valerio Conti of UAE, Enrico Barbin of Bardiani, Matteo Monteguti of AG2R, Mads Pedersen and Laurent Didier of Trek Segafredo. But the stage really was all about the Zonkalan. As the race reached the bottom of the climb, only Barbin and Conti were away still. Igor Anton, who's won on this climb before in 2011, he went clear for a little while. Michael Woods was looking very good for a little while for EF Energy. EF Energy
is joining teams together
for EF Education First.
Education powered by something.
Oh dear. But then it was, Team Sky went to the front. Wout Poels did a lot of work to set up Chris Froome for his attack. Various riders were in trouble at different times. Richard Carapaz, the white jersey wearer, was in trouble notably. And then the group really distilled down to Froome, Poels, Simon Yates, Tom Dumoulin, Pozzovivo, Reichenbach was in there with Thibaut Pinot, Lopez, and Carapaz just hanging on. Dumoulin then let the wheel go a little bit with about 5 kilometres to go, and Froome attacked with 4 to go, got a gap. At one point he was twiddling it's probably a reasonable gear, but he was really spinning his legs and opening the gap. And then with a bit over 3 kilometres to go, Simon Yates went clear and really turned the screw on Dumoulin and Pinot and Pozzovivo behind. And then it was that pursuit match between Chris Froome and Simon Yates, and Froome held on just to win the stage. Simon Yates gained time over everybody else except Froome, and now leads by 1 minute 24 ahead of Tom Dumoulin. Pozzovivo's moved up to third place, swapping places with Thibaut Pinot. Chris Froome is up from 12th to 5th. Lopez is up from 11th to 6th, and everybody else has kind of shuffled down a bit, but not significantly so. The likes of Bennett have slipped a couple of places. Rowan Dennis has slipped from 7th to 11th. So a real shuffle, but not a decisive sort out on the Zonkalam, I don't think. What do you reckon?
Well, you mentioned Chris Froome's gear. 34 by 32, apparently.
Same as Dumoulin.
I wonder, I mean, that's probably, with a lot of comparisons with times and so on, that's probably a big change in the last 5 or 6 years, those very, very low gears. And it was quite striking just to see Froome, the way that he was riding, and his legs were moving very, very quickly up a very steep slope.
Yeah, I mean, the gradient on the Zonkalan is what everyone talks about, but I'm not even sure that it makes that much difference. The key variable, I would suggest, on the Zonkalan is the length. Well, on climbs in general in major tours, it's the length of the effort. And the Zonkalan's a 38-minute effort. It's exactly the same as Alpe d'Huez. So I would suggest that we saw exactly the same results today that we would have seen on pretty much any 38-minute climb. Because, as you say, Rich, the gears now that most of the riders have, well, all of the riders have, pretty much nullify just how extreme the slope is.
That's an interesting point, yeah. But it did certainly suit Chris Froome's style, and it suited Simon Yates' style. But Tom Dumoulin, I think, at the end of the day, when he looks at those results, will also think that time loss of 37 seconds, if you factor in the time bonus as well, that it fitted into the best case scenario bracket, well, surely.
He didn't say best case scenario. I spoke to him at the finish. However, technical problems are going to prevent us from hearing from Tom Dumoulin. However,
second time that's happened.
I said to him, well, yeah, but Tom Dumoulin, we should just stop. We should just give him a wide berth because he has the Indian sign over our equipment.
He destroys our equipment. Yeah, he does. He's got some kind of superpower.
He does. However, I said, Tom, win, lose, or draw today? He said, draw. I said, are you winning, losing, or drawing on general classification? He said, draw, but we'll see how it goes over the next few days.
Interesting. It's nicely poised, isn't it? I mean, yeah. What was interesting in Chris Froome's press conference was that he kept talking about being 3 minutes down and how that tended to count against him in GC, that he's kind of talking himself out of it, the pink jersey. But he did keep returning to the fact that the Maglia Rosa was in the back of his mind on the climb itself. And I think he was going for the stage win here, but he's not given up completely, I don't think, on winning this race overall.
Absolutely not. No, with the time trial on, well, there's a very difficult stage tomorrow where everyone will have to pay attention. The climbs aren't particularly hard or particularly long, but it's real kind of difficult territory. It'll be racing territory tomorrow. Then, of course, there's the time trial. It's not inconceivable that Chris Froome could take 3 minutes out of Simon Yates, and we could be looking at Froome and Dumoulin 1 and 2 on GC before then that run of mountain stages. So what is fantastic about this race is you've got the pure climber Simon Yates against Tom Dumoulin, who is much more of a time trial specialist but who can climb, and then Chris Froome, who is good at both, and the time gaps between them are, you couldn't really kind of have selected the ideal handicap system going into the final week to set up a good
like
race.
Reminders of those time gaps, because I want us to establish who is in the virtual, the Maglia Rosa Virtuale. Who's the leader in the clubhouse?
Well, somebody emailed us about this phrase, leader in the clubhouse.
Well, it kind of means the opposite. But anyway, but it's as though, yeah, that would mean that
somebody else was
already
in Rome. No one's in Rome yet. Well, Simon Yates obviously is leading. Tom Dumoulin is at 124. Pozzovivo is at 137. So Pino is at 146, and then Froome is at 310.
So if we assume that tomorrow is another draw, a draw in the sense that Dumoulin and Yates finish on the same time tomorrow, then Tom Dumoulin, I would suggest, I think the ballpark figure is 2 minutes in the time trial. We mentioned earlier in the week, London, didn't we? Mario Scirea, the UAE direct sportif, thought that he could gain 3.5 minutes on Yates. Ooh. I saw Mario yesterday, and he wasn't very happy because he claimed he'd been flagrantly misquoted, and he doesn't think that Dumoulin will gain 3.5 minutes at all. So we say 2 minutes, then that puts Dumoulin 40 seconds ahead of Yates. That's close, isn't it? I mean, with three big mountain stages left
and all those time bonuses,
you don't think Yates is going to gain time on Dumoulin every one of those? Certainly not. Prato Nevoso, the first one of the alpine stages, I think is great for Dumoulin, but the next two, you would think that he could gain 40 in one of those.
You would. One of the very, very many excellent points you made in my absence was that Simon Yates had effectively won a Tirreno Adriatico.
I'm glad you like that.
I thought that was just fine, because what we haven't had yet are mountain stages where there are multiple mountains. And in fact, tomorrow is the first day where we've had several climbs. You know, we've had mountain top finishes, but we haven't had days of big climbing over several mountain passes. We've got that tomorrow, and we've got that towards the end of the week. So, in a sense, you know, these are the stages that will probably suit Chris Froome and guys with the real experience of winning or finishing the podium for Grand Tour, which Simon Yates, let's not forget, doesn't yet really have. He's finished Grand Tours, but he's not been battling out for the win yet. So, although we're 2 weeks into the race, it's still kind of early days.
It is, but to counter that, I would say that Simon Yates's confidence in his own ability is beginning to shine through. I mean, in the press conference this evening, he made the Zonkerland sound like, I mean, he said the first 3 kilometres weren't as hard as he thought they were going to be. The next kind of 4 or 5 were extremely difficult. And then, you know, he basically measured his effort perfectly and was closing in on Froome. And had it been another, you know, 500 metres, he may well have caught Chris Froome. So he's climbing extremely well. He also made the point about his team being the strongest. And they kind of had a fairly comfortable-ish ride today. They got him into the position with a minimum of fuss, a minimum of stress. So he's still, you know, he is, I would say that
chipper.
He's not going to suddenly falter just because there's another couple of mountains in the way. I mean, you're raising your eyebrows there.
He's been in amazing form for 2 weeks, right? And Froome talked a lot tonight about coming into form in the third week. And there could, even if Froome doesn't win the race, he could still have an impact on it, you know, in the sense in how he rides it. Well, poles as well looked really good today. So it's not, the pattern that we've seen up till now could be disrupted.
Also, Lionel, in the last couple of years, we've talked about how there's been a lot of defensive riding in major tours because a high finish in a major tour can change someone's life, and it can change someone's career because suddenly their contract is worth a million more. But we've also said that there are a few guys who have already built their palmarès. Contador was one of them, and he could afford to to throw caution to the wind and attack from long distance. Chris Froome is also in that category. A third place does nothing for Chris Froome's palmarès, so he will try to win this race, I think. Shall we hear from Dave Brailsford?
Dave, in our preview of the Zonkerland stage yesterday, we didn't even mention Chris Froome, but he's right back in the race to win the Giro tonight, isn't he?
Yeah, I thought a man of your betting knowledge and your kind of like, you like a little flutter, don't you? You know, that was a good outside bet. Come on, I'm a bit disappointed.
I didn't look at the odds this morning. Didn't have time. We were too busy eating tiramisu.
It was an important day for us today, and certainly for Chris. And I think somehow he's turned this situation around, and I think it's as much mental as anything else. To be fair, he was coming in a little bit undercooked, shall we say, and that was quite deliberate. But he needed, I think when you do that, you need everything to go absolutely perfectly in that first phase. So you spend the first week getting over his crash, as against kind of building form, as it were. You could see during the last few days he started to switch back into, okay, I think I can do it. And he's got back into that, okay, I think I could do this today. So the team decided to try and take it on and wow. And Chris have got quite a good, you know, they enjoyed the Langlois last year. They think when it's really steep and sustained, they manage their efforts pretty well. So they talk about that quite a lot, and they say, look, let's go for it, you know, let's lay it down, and what have we got to lose, quite frankly, you know. Fair play to him. I think that to be able to hold that 6 or 7 or 8 seconds, whatever it was at the end, that took some doing, and fair play to Simon, let's face it, he's riding a brilliant race. Chris needed that, the team needed that, and I think it, you know, for us, you know, it's just good for the race as well, I think.
You'll be aware, Dave, that in the last few days people have speculated that Chris might leave the Giro, he wouldn't finish it. Someone noticed today that Tim Kerrison's no longer here. I think he's in Tenerife at a training camp, and that was interpreted by some as a sign that the white flag had been raised. Has he been close in the last couple of days to calling it quits?
No, not even. It's not even been talked about. It makes me laugh, it really does. Tim was always down to, he's gone with G, and so whilst he's in a racing environment, you know, and you've got the guys, you've got G and Quiato, all the tour group up in Tenerife, and they're training for that, then you think, okay, well, where's Tim best placed? You know, how does he split his time? And actually, he's a coach, and his job is to get him fit, and Nico's job is to manage the racing. So, you know, it's just normal for us that Tim, he was always down to go to Tenerife, and off he went. And in terms of quitting, it's not even been discussed. So I think that's pure speculation.
And finally, Dave, we've got the time trial coming up in a couple of days, but is Chris still in a position where tomorrow has to be another big day and he has to gain more time? Or do you think it's a question now of maybe consolidating it, looking at it, and then attacking those last three stages next week?
I think what you'll see today, after today, you know, everybody had to go deep today, like really, really deep. This wasn't Etna, you know what I mean? It's a very different proposition than what we've had so far. And people are tired. You can see the fatigue is starting to impact on people's performances, and people are dropping away. And tomorrow, after today, you know, it's going to be. It's very difficult to predict what will happen tomorrow now. And I think we, you know, some people pull up okay, others won't, and we'll just have to see how people respond. So I think it'll be another. I think there'll still be changes tomorrow, and then a consolidation, and then all in for the time trial, which I think will be pivotal as well for the race overall, of course, and hopefully Chris can do a good solid time trial, and then as we move in, if he is moving up, you know, as hoped, if he's moving into good, better form, he's starting to build form, hopefully he'll be building his form as others start to dip into the last 3 days next week, and that could be, you know, that could be spectacular. And the thing is, the bottom line is, we don't know, do we? You know, the reality is, which makes it all worthwhile and exciting. You know, it's just the roller coaster, the ups and downs. So that's why we love it, I think. So.
San Francisco.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast. Lionel, are you okay with me doing this?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
You've been obviously doing this really well.
Well, you know, you're back, so you slot into your natural role.
Thank you to Rafa. What we have to mention tonight in relation to Rafa is the winner of the second Pedlar de Charme of the Giro.
Controversial. You announced
a shortlist.
An erroneous shortlist. I mean, it's been a shambles, hasn't it?
There was a Shearer's inquiry, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And it was decided to...
Anyway, moving on.
There were a couple of candidates there, perhaps, for the overall Pedlar de Charme at the Giro. Mm-hmm. One of them went home today, Tim Wellens. He might have been one, but... Anyway, the shortlist was redrawn a couple of times, and eventually a winner emerged, Sam Bennett. Convincing winner in the end, so we'll seek him out tomorrow. He actually finished last today at the Zonkalan, so we'll seek him out tomorrow. And
who's in the black jersey?
Him.
We've not heard anything
present
about that.
Giuseppe Fonzi.
He is. Oh, okay. He's not making such a big deal of it this year.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, it is Giuseppe Fonzi. He's got a convincing lead of 13 minutes as last man overall.
He hasn't turned up to the start in a leather jacket. Yeah, this year. And
no,
and been telling everyone, hey.
Oh, dear.
So we heard from Dave Brailsford before the break there. Should that have come with some kind of warning for people? Because we had a few comments about Dave Brailsford interviews, didn't we?
Well, I mean, talking about his main rider being back in the race. I mean, it is an interesting. Froome made no secret of the fact that... he was coming in below his very best and hoping to ride his way into the race. So, I mean, I'm sure there'll be people surprised at how good he looked on the Zonkalan, which is an extremely hard climb. But this is a four-time Tour de France winner. You know, it's not like he's, you know, suddenly gone from, you know, nothing to... stage winner on the Zonkalan, and I thought there was something quite cool and calm about him in the press conference as well. He seemed to be exuding a sort of confidence that the second half of the race is going to be good for him. He said that he had a plan for this particular climb, and they stuck to that plan. He was one of the only riders to actually recce the Zonkalan in advance of the race, and it was interesting to note that he's also had a look at the time trial course about a month ago. And so, you know, he's clearly done his homework on the race. He will have had a plan of how to attack this race, and although the time gap is significant, the fact that he's got an opportunity to possibly get within seconds rather than minutes of Yates on Tuesday means that exactly what you're saying, Richard. Suddenly, then he's a very, very dangerous rider when it comes to the next climbs. He's not Chris Froome sort of out of contention playing catch-up. He's suddenly Chris Froome right back in the bike race. And Simon Yates almost would be in the position then where he's kind of eked out this lead once and then he's got to do it again. And that's really the landscape of the race now.
What about some other names, Charles? George Bennett, the Lotto Jumbo... Lotto NL Jumbo rider. Sorry. His target was not to follow Simon Yates today, but it was to follow guys like Richard Carapaz and Miguel Angel Lopez. Didn't succeed in that. There was significant mitigation, though, because he had a big problem with his bike at the bottom of the Zonkalan, as he told me, actually, when he came in. First of all, George Bennett, tell me how your Zonkalan was, your day on the Zonkalan.
Should ask, really. In a brief summary, at the bottom of the Zonkalan, my bike went into this thing called crash mode, which is where the bike thinks you've had a crash and goes into the biggest gear and doesn't move. So, yeah.
That doesn't make it particularly easy on the hardest climb in Europe.
No, not ideal. So that cost me quite a long time fixing that, and then I was just completely out the arse, and it was so hard to come back, you know, stuck behind motorbikes, and you miss the group, and that just, which, when you're off the back at the bottom of a 40 minute climb to hold them by myself for that, it's not too bad, but That's a real hit in my GC.
A disappointing day for Bennett, but due to circumstances beyond his control, probably the biggest loser of the day really was Fabio Aru, who would have been looking today to go forwards in terms of time and position, but he's actually slipped back. He lost 2.5 minutes almost to Froome, and he slipped from 10th to 13th. Looked really sluggish today, didn't he?
He's having an absolute shocker.
Yeah.
Is there something up with that team, Daniel?
Well, there are more and more rumours. With every day, there are new rumours about things not quite being right in that team, and also impending changes, whether it be in personnel, or Ciro mentioned last night, personnel that Aru's brought with him. Paolo Tirolongo, the former Astana rider, is his coach, and he's part of the staff there. And also, you know, it's not inconceivable that Fabio Aru will be dispatched to the Tour de France now to make amends. Ooh. Which would not be particularly good news for Dan Martin, I don't think.
But the team generally, and Dan Martin hasn't been riding all that well so far this year. The Tour de France is his main goal, admittedly, but that it's not a team that appears, whereas Bahrain Merida, for example, seems to really be firing on all cylinders this year as a team. UAE, they're just...
I think it was always going to be a big culture shock for Dan Martin and Christophe, who signed in the winter. They, you know, the teams that they were coming from are very different, predominantly English-speaking teams, and UAE is kind of the old Lamprey team. In Aru's case, I mean, he's been an inconsistent rider throughout his young career, still young career. He's been intermittently brilliant. But he is not someone who you can necessarily always rely on as a leader.
By contrast, Domenico Pozzovivo rides for the other Middle East sponsored team, Bahrain Merida. He's third overall now, and their dream is a place on the podium. And even though he may well lose a packet in the time trial,
or he might go really well,
He's
done well in time trials in the past.
So pulled out some surprising results, but with all the climbing, you know, he's looking good for a potential podium place. And the contrast between Pozzovivo and Aru is really stark at the moment. I thought Aru, I know he's got a slumped shoulder style anyway, but he looked pretty unhappy. Certainly when he came over the line, looked like he knew he was going to get a bit of grief for his performance today.
I mean, when I'm out on my bike, I imagine that I look like Contador or something when I'm climbing, but in reality I think I look like Fabio Aru.
No comment.
What did you imagine you looked like on that picture that Lionel took of you today? I hope that wasn't a selfie.
It was a selfie.
Understand the principle of a selfie?
I didn't post it. What's the principle of a selfie?
Someone posted it.
Jonathan Rowe, the man behind the machine. What's the principle of a selfie?
It's supposed to make you look good, isn't it?
Wow.
What's your most flattering picture, Rich?
You're very photogenic usually, but not today.
Lionel,
Lionel and I were up at the top of Monte's Oncolan today. Yeah. We got the chairlift up. Where were you?
Well, I was down at the buses.
We think you were watching the royal wedding.
I was grafting.
Watching the royal wedding. Goodness me.
I was trawling the team buses for, you know, tidbits of information, the kind of stuff that keeps us in business.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Independent research shows 10% of sports nutrition products could get a professional rider banned. Trust Science in Sport, the world's highest standard of banned substance testing.
Yes, thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring us and helping us to be here. You can get 25% off all your Science Sport products. SISCP25 is a discount code at scienceandsport.com. We had a listener's question last night. We'll play another one in the coming week.
Yeah, that offer is not available in conjunction with any other discount.
You're supposed to say that really quickly. That's what they do.
That's the disclaimer. Yeah. speed that bit up in the edit.
So Lionel, as I mentioned, we were up there at the top of Monte Sonclan, and it was amazing, really. It was we've all seen the pictures of what an incredible amphitheatre it is, but as you come around the corner, around the brow of the hill, and you're just faced with this wall of people.
Mm.
It was quite a spectacle.
Yeah, one of the most atmospheric mountain
Mexican
top
waves
finishes.
And everything going on.
There was a Mexican wave. The noise carried really well across from one side to the other. We stand on a lot of mountains during the Tour de France and the Giro, and I was I thought the Angliru last year as a very difficult climb. It lacked something. I don't know. I can't quite think what it was that it lacked. It was, but the Zoncolan.
There was no one up there, was there? People?
Yeah, it probably was. It was the people. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what it was. And up at the Zoncolan, there was a sense of excitement, a sense that they'd had to battle their way up there one way or the other. If they'd ridden up on bikes, as a lot of people had done, you know, they'd made a real effort to get there, whichever side they'd come from. Everyone else had to go up in a chairlift. So there was a sense of, well, we're here, so we're going to enjoy it. And that, there was that kind of crackle in the air, which you kind of, you get at Alpe d'Huez, but Alpe d'Huez is kind of the mainstream climb, whereas the Monte Zoncolan, it's only been here half a dozen times, so it's still got that kind of mystique to it.
Alpe d'Huez is the Britney
slightly undiscovered.
It's the Britney Spears of Alpine climbs, is that what you're trying to say? Or the Maroon 5 of Alpine climbs?
Yeah, Alpe d'Huez is the Maroon 5. It's ubiquitous. If it was lift music, Alpe d'Huez would be the lift music of mountaintop finishes.
It was like Yorkshire up there, wasn't it? I mean, it was an incredible atmosphere.
It was, yeah.
A little bit of Yorkshire transplanted into Italy. Fantastic.
Mm.
We also went on another mission today, didn't we?
Yeah, you weren't very enthusiastic about this. I don't think I've ever seen you less interested in anything.
I think that I just felt that the order was wrong in terms of lunch.
Napalm, tell us a bit about, well, you introduce the mission, but recap the first half of the mission yesterday. Where are we at with the Tiramisu World Cup?
The Tiramisu World Cup. So yesterday we went to Treviso, which claims to have invented...
One particular restaurant, Alle Beccheria.
Claims to have invented tiramisu, and we tried their tiramisu, and it was a beautiful straight edge cut piece of tiramisu.
It could have refined, wasn't it? Very elegant.
It was really elegant. I was really impressed with it. I could see why they won the World Cup, and I was convinced
that took place in Bologna in February.
I was convinced that Tolmezzo, where we went today, would not be able to hold a candle to the Treviso tiramisu.
The Albergo Roma, which also claims to have invented tiramisu, that's where we were at about midday today. Here's what happened. Napalm, where are we now?
Well, we're in Tolmezzo, and I'm just wondering which of these cafes here is the home of the losing tiramisu makers.
Well, attention's building, isn't it? We're about to... Well, the second half's about to kick off. We think that Treviso and Alle Beccheria has got about a 3-goal lead. However, we've been talking to some members of the Tolmezzo team, and they're talking a good game. We've been speaking to the barman, the hotel receptionist, and they're pretty confident they can overturn this disadvantage. So we better go and taste it, and also find out what these claims that they invented tiramisu and not Alle Beccheria in Treviso are based on.
The thing is, what's more prestigious, the World Cup or the Cycling Podcast Award?
Today, Lionel, we're going to have the tiramisu they always make here in the Albergo Roma, but with a difference, with a twist, because the Giro d'Italia is coming to Tolmezzo tomorrow. They've coloured it pink.
But it doesn't taste any different to normal.
No, you don't sound very excited. I expected great excitement when I told you that.
I don't like gimmicks with food.
When are you going home again?
Well, Monday. But I don't know. Come on, you can't. You would be the last person that would like a gimmick with food. So, you know, I just think... No need to
colour
it.
True, Lionel. But let's taste it first. But after we've tasted it, I'm going to fill you in. There's some controversy. There's big controversy about the World Cup that took place in Bologna earlier this year.
Beh, si basano fondamentalmente che sull'altro locale che gestisco si basano sul fatto che sul locale storico che gestisco che è Roma nel 1953.
So, the same drill, Daniel. What's the gist?
Well, Lionel, Michel says that his claims are based on the fact, he says, that his predecessors at the Albergo Roma created tiramisu in 1953. Remember, yesterday, Ali Beccheria said they invented tiramisu in 1972. So, in Tolmezzo, there was a local fellow, a guy who sold cheese, who started selling mascarpone. And Michel's predecessors, specifically the lady who used to run the kitchen at the Albergo Roma, Norma Pielli, bought some. She was already making a dessert with cream and coffee that she called Dolce Torino. But then she had the idea of swapping the cream with mascarpone. Not long after that, one day, a German tourist ordered this Dolce Torino and told the Signora Pielli that it was a great pick-me-up. Literally, it was a tiramisu. Norma Pielli told her husband this and suggested they change the name of the dish to tiramisu. That's what happened. In fact, Norma Pielli's children claim to have a receipt from the mid-1950s, I think it was 1953, with tiramisu itemized on that bill. If this document was genuine, of course, it would mean that Alle Beccheria's claims that they were the first restaurant in the world to have tiramisu on the menu would be false. That deals with the date and the origin, at least from the Albergo Roma's point of view. As for the contentious issue of the World Cup in Bologna earlier this year, Michel claims that the Albergo Roma was robbed. They had to travel further to Bologna and they got there earlier the previous day. They then had to use the fridges laid on by the organisers, which malfunctioned and froze their tiramisu. The next day, the judges told them, in confidence, that their tiramisu was better, but they couldn't overlook one glaring technical mistake, namely that a part of the tiramisu had frozen because of the fridges. When I asked him whether, despite the result, it's still a friendly rivalry, he says that, well, sort of, but the defeat still really burns. He thinks, as well as Fridgegate, the fact that Treviso took a coachload of 60 people also had an influence, and they also had a sponsor. From my point of view, though, Lionel, I must say that that sounds a trifle far-fetched.
Oh, dear. I mean, the Fridgegate fans going to watch the Tiramisu World Cup, I think we've got to go next year.
Questa è la ricetta originale, no?
The original recipe.
Solo che c'è il colore rosa, ma la rosa. 4 secondi.
Ah,
no?
4 seconds. The biscuit has to be put in coffee for 4 seconds.
Wow.
Sono cinque o sei?
Cambio.
Change. If it's 5 seconds or 6 seconds, line.
Io
ho
già detto troppo.
Changes.
Io ho già detto troppo.
Diciamo che loro sono i.
Sono Benetti, sono più bravi di me.
Sono la Juve del mondo del tiramisù, voi siete Chievo Verona.
Perché? Perché loro.
Juventus. Because he's sending. Perché loro.
So they're the underdogs.
Yeah. They're the underdogs, yeah. Mm.
Oh. Difficult though, isn't it?
Mm.
What's the actual verdict though?
I mean, are we going to have to think about it, or is it a score draw? Is it a high scoring?
It's a penalty shootout, but for my personal taste is I prefer this one. It's the, I think the bitterness on the top of the Treviso one was just a little too much.
Number one. High five.
The winner is Tommezzo!
I would say, Daniel, a shock result.
All sorts in there. Everything in there. There was, you know, rivalries, skullduggery. There was allegations of financial doping. There was, you know, fridge-related polemics.
The only thing that can make this story better.
Sorry, I'm just catching up with this story here, but the one that I ate today, that was the runner-up, yeah?
No, well, Napalm like that
no,
one.
No,
it won on penalties.
It won on penalties, but it didn't win the actual World Cup. Yeah.
No, but there's going to be a rematch soon.
It was all right. It was very light.
Oh, God.
Well, it is very light. It is very light.
I thought the one that Orla made for us in our castle, that was good.
It was good. Maybe we could get Orla to enter the Tiramisu World Cup next year.
That's a great idea.
Sorry,
representing the cycling podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I was put off a bit by the pink colouring. I thought that was a gimmick too far. But I actually preferred the flavour and texture of today's tiramisu. But I'm quite a fickle judge. No, I'm a fickle judge. I'll always enjoy the last thing I've tasted. That's the problem.
Right. Should we talk about tomorrow's stage?
Yeah, let's.
Can I just say, before we say anything else about tomorrow's stage, can I advise the listeners that kilometre 71, we go through Valle di Cadore, and there's a tiny, well, there's a hamlet outside Valle di Cadore, which you're also going through, called Vinas di Cadore. The former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, David Duke, hid there for 2 years.
Wow.
Between 2011 yeah. and 2013. He was known, well, he called himself, referred to himself as Mr. White, never socialized with anyone, and he was expelled from Italy in 2013, but no one's ever really got to the bottom of what he was doing in the middle of the Dolomites. We are in the Dolomites tomorrow.
What an extraordinary little story that is.
It is.
Daniel, I can't.
He claimed to be doing research on Sud Tyrolese history.
Blimey.
But he got his visa from the Maltese, from the US Embassy in Malta. No, the Italian Embassy in Malta. What have I got this wrong? Anyway, the Malta was involved, but anyway, it was highly illegal. It was highly underhand, and he's been expelled now.
I'm glad to hear you confirm, Daniel, that we're in the Dolomites tomorrow.
We are in the Dolomites.
Is this because of the rock or the location? Tomorrow.
No, it's always to do with the rock in my book. I go by the geological definition of Dolomites.
Hang on, you go by. Do you have your own kind of border?
Well, no, let's not get into this now. Let's not get into this now.
There must be some.
I'll post on Twitter, but I'll remind everyone tomorrow on Twitter what the real definition of Dolomites is. However, tomorrow, looking at the Garibaldi the Road book, one thing that is curious about tomorrow's stage, which I think by general consensus could be the most difficult, most punishing stage in the race, and the most interesting stage in the race. The climbs are only, well, there's a third cat and there are two second category climbs. I would suggest that were those climbs in the Tour de France, those second category climbs, they would be either whole category climbs or certainly first category climbs.
They're steep, aren't they?
Very steep, not particularly long, and they're not the famous Dolomite climbs by any stretch of the imagination. So we've got the Passo Tre Croci, Passo di Sant'Antonio, and a climb that I don't think the Giro has ever been up before, the Costa Lissoio.
But this stage has been designed, because they could go over higher climbs, couldn't they, in this region?
Yeah, they could.
But it's been designed for kind of aggressive ambush, aggression, a little bit of panic, harder to control on short, steep climbs and numerous climbs than if you have, say, four big mountains. Everybody knows the rhythm of that. A team can control, you know, no one's going to go from a long way out. Whereas here, there's a real, it's kind of risk and reward, isn't it? It's, the profile of the stage is really enticing people to try something. And there are people who will try something, whether it's for the stage win or to jump a few places on GC. And hopefully, in that final third of the stage, we will see some real fireworks. I mean, it could be one of the great days, with any luck.
It could. And Simon Yates was asked in the press conference what it's like to race against someone like Dumoulin when you drop him, but you don't know. You know, that this is a sort of new way of riding, really. And Froome has done it several times. But when riders are dropped, but they're not dropped. The moment where the race was decided.
Yeah.
You know, that someone's dropped and they're gone and that's it. But
yeah.
Dumoulin rides in a completely different way. And it must be really difficult to know. Because when you drop somebody, you get this boost of confidence, adrenaline, and all the rest of it. You're lulled into making a bigger effort than you perhaps should.
But it's talking from personal experience, aren't you?
Well, I mean, just the psychology of it is fascinating, I think.
Imagine if you're Simon Yates giving it absolutely everything and the gap isn't going up. And it's just it's just sticking there.
And but
it's
like trying
shake toilet toilet roll stuck to your foot and it just won't
come shadow looming over you.
Yeah. Also, purely from a dramatic point of view, I mean, I remember when Indurain cracked at Les Arcs in 1996, and this just seemed like this huge cataclysmic moment.
And that was it.
It had never happened.
He'd never been
once
dropped.
He'd been dropped, and then he never came back. He was always dropped after that, and it just seemed like this incredible watershed. Whereas, you know, we've seen that happen 100 times with Chris Froome now, that he gets gapped and then he gets back on.
So it's set up nicely. The race is nicely poised. We should leave it there, shouldn't we?
We should. Well, I was just going to reiterate the point that you couldn't really select three riders and these particular time gaps for a more finely balanced final seven stages, or however many it is, whether you, well, Rome's not going to be a factor, is it?
But got some good news for you. Tonight we're staying in San Daniele del Friuli, the most famous cured meat in Italy. Excellent. Apart from Parma ham, is from San Daniele.
Daniel, and Prosecco like country, as well.
No? You didn't seem to like food when we went for the Tiramisu World Cup today.
No, I did. I enjoyed it, but I wanted to eat that after. I wanted to eat that after lunch.
I thought you were boycotting it. No, in the same way that some people boycotted Israel. I thought you were boycotting the Tiramisu World Cup.
I think if you miss the first half of the Tiramisu World Cup, it's very hard to be enthusiastic about the second half.
So much happened in the first half. Yeah. It was very difficult to get up to speed.
But is this Prosecco country as well where we'll be tonight, or we are just a little bit too far north?
No, we're too far. We're too far east.
Too far east. Okay. We had a lovely
We were very close to Prosecco country last night. Yeah. When you tried to put Richard on the license for the on the insurance for the hire car today, you were in Prosecco country.
Right. I don't think there's any correlation between those two things, is there?
I am me. Was Lionel's best line in the car rental place, but that's for another time. Let's leave it for now. Lionel, thank you.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. I'm handing back to you, Richard.
Okay, the virtual baton. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, thank you.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Con l'acqua e lo vino, ci gira nella tenevo giardina, che la raccolgo con l'acqua e lo vino.